Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Mike Rowe is today's guest on the USA Football Coach and Coordinator Podcast. A college football assistant turned high school head coach, Rowe currently serves as the head coach at Recorie High School in Minnesota, where he's earned a berth to the state playoff each of his last three seasons. Rowe opens up about integrating zone and gap schemes, his midline concept, and how he shifted away from mirrored sides in the passing game. We look forward to this and more on today's episode of the Coach and Coordinator Podcast. Coach Rowe, thanks for joining us on the Coach and Coordinator Podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me today, Coach. Appreciate it.
Well, Coach, we're going to talk about some of your experiences here, but let's start with the beginning of it. Why'd you become a football coach?
It kind of goes back being a young kid, watching it on TV and getting to play, and I think some of the best role models I had, my dad including, was a football coach, and the coaches that I had in the youth program and in high school, they really got me passionate. And then my college coaches at Valley City State University were super great at developing relationships and things like that with our players. And because of that, I thought that was like the best route to take in my life. And I'm very grateful that it ended up that way.
Coach, looking back on your career thus far, what were some lessons you've learned that have made a major impact on your development as a coach?
You know, I think one is developing relationships with kids has got to be priority number one. It's not about wins and losses. I think when I was a younger coach, when I first got those jobs early on, I thought I knew everything, and I really didn't know anything at all. And so when I coached my first 3 years of high school, 2 years as assistant and one as a head coach, I learned a lot of valuable lessons and made a lot of mistakes, just flat out messed up. And when I got the opportunity to be a grad assistant at St. Cloud State University, that ended up showing me really how much I didn't know about football, which really humbled me. And then the other part is just learning how to teach football properly to kids or to anybody playing the game.
The jump to the college level certainly opens your eyes to the level of detail that this game requires or that's involved in this game. And I know I had a similar experience after having 20-some years of coaching experience and then going to the college level and thinking I was a pretty detailed coach, still understanding I had some to learn. Boy, were my eyes open there. And I think, though, it's been a great experience. And, it's something that I think all coaches need to understand, that there's always more to learn. And I know that you've become involved in really trying to help coaches learn. Tell us a little bit about what you do in that regard.
A couple years back, had an opportunity to start doing, I think at the time there was a lot of webinar stuff going on in football. There wasn't a lot of resources out there like there are today, but got into that stuff and started creating some products. And as years went on and the program developed some success, more and more people have kind of been into that stuff. And it really started with like our character ed program in the NFL recognizing us for doing what we do there. And then the X's and O's stuff kind of followed. And it's been a great thing to be a part of. And, from Twitter chats to daily Twitter chats to everything, how much football coaching has evolved and how much you can learn just on a daily basis from anyone in the country now, where before it was really hard or taboo to even share what you did. And coaches get it now, and they're just making the game better every single year.
Coach, let's talk a little bit about that character education piece that you mentioned. How does that incorporate into your program?
That's the foundation. That's the building block, the main level of our whole entire program. And we take time out of our day 2 to 3 times a week out of our practice. We basically eliminate half an hour of practice on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday to work and develop on certain aspects of character. And some are, like dealing with adversity, and some are more serious, like mental health or domestic violence. But I could really see, now we're kind of in that cycle being here 9 years. You can see how our kids understand these things and how well behaved they act when they go out into different settings and how they treat women in the hallways and things like that. So just some great tools to give them. We know mom and dad are telling them what's right and wrong, but they don't always listen. So we're just using our voice to help send that message to the kids a little further.
Coach, and that character education builds into a larger framework of a culture of your program. Talk to us about the things you do to further develop, you know, that basis and turn it into something that permeates your program.
Yeah, you know, I think it just develops that ability not to quit. You know, I can look back at a lot of games, not necessarily games we won, but games that maybe we were out of hand and my kids continue to play hard. Part of that process, you know, Nick Saban talks about the process and not looking at the scoreboard and how you handle like every single play. And I think that's probably what I'm most proud of is when my kids are competing, whether it's football, basketball, baseball, golf, wrestling, hockey, whatever they're playing, the kids that are in our program, you can tell because they don't ever quit no matter what the situation is. And that's just something you need in life. Cause as we know, things don't always go your way. They don't always go the way you want them to go. And sometimes you're going to get knocked down and you got to get up and you're going to have to take care of that. And I think we learn a lot of valuable lessons from, you know, the games that we lose. And we're not a program that goes 12-0. You know, we're usually 9-4 or 10-4 or something like that. But we make good runs when it matters in the playoffs.
Coach, what are some specific activities that you do that both teach and test the culture of your team?
You know, we do a lot of program development. Our team is broken up into 8 separate individual teams that each coach we draft. We have a draft in February each year at a coaching clinic that we do. And then from there, we throw team competitions. We, in Minnesota, we're allowed 11 days that we can practice football. And so we start developing those teams and that camaraderie during the summer months, but we put them through, you know, team competitions so they learn to compete on a daily basis.
Coach, as you move that out onto the field, obviously teaching becomes an important part of what you do to be able to take that culture that you build upon and make the strategy on the field work. What are some of the best things that your coaches are doing to teach your players your system?
You know, they just, my defensive staff does an amazing job of taking the morning time and doing their film study during that time and their attention to detail and how they give them full reports and the detail there. And they break it down so that when they get to that practice field, they really know what's going on. And then offensively, you know, we're kind of schematically based on what is the defense given us, and we kind of build our game plan around there. And it's just giving our kids that field time to understand this is where the ball needs to go, this is where we're running the ball, this is why we're attacking this, and answering those whys for them. And it helps them understand a little deeper into what we're trying to do each Friday night when we take the field.
Coach, technology obviously is becoming a big part of this game, especially in the way we coach it. Aside from huddle, which we all understand the benefits of, what are some of the pieces of technology that you're using or looking to incorporate into your workflow to better teach players?
Yeah, we have we use Echo 1612, the instant replay system, and because it runs basically on battery packs and iPads and our cameras. We bring that out to our practices every day, and we film our kids in either drill time or team time or one-on-one. We just pick little specific areas. We don't always film everything, but we can pull kids out of the drill and bring them to the iPad and show them, hey, you see how, you're taking a false step here as a wide receiver or my quarterbacks, you know, look at your eyes when the snaps come and your eyes are down. We got to fix those details. So we're able to correct them and show them right away. And I really think, you know, the development of replay for myself, coaching quarterbacks, seems that I'm cycling a new guy in every single year. It seems that, you know, the 4 years that we've had this replay, it's really helped our kids learn from their mistakes much faster because they're able to see it.
Coach, I think that's an outstanding use of the instant replay, and I've long been a proponent of that. I think I started using that maybe 6 years ago at the college level in some, kind of, basic form. We didn't have the systems that are available now. But at the college level, I couldn't use it on game day, so I used it at practice. And I thought having that immediate feedback is just an outstanding tool. And I think it's probably underutilized. I know everybody has those systems, you know, whether it's the huddle system or Echo or some of the others. I guess I don't understand why more people aren't using it out at practice.
Yeah, and I think some of it is the systems aren't, you know, battery operated where you can transition it that way. You know, I think even just filming with an iPad at practice and yep. having it where you can go back to the clips, you know, I think that just helps out. But, you know, I always hear people like, oh, it's built for games. And I'm like, I think it's built for practice because if you can correct the mistakes, you don't have to show kids on Friday night. You know what I mean? And
right.
that'd be the ultimate goal is not using it because you're making all the right plays. And that's kind of how I see the practice piece. And, you know, I think we do Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday very well. We're able to work those in with our practice and able to show our kids what they need to do.
Yeah, and that was our first use of it was just an iPad. And, you know, we would lose those parts of practice maybe where someone was looking at it, but still it was feedback that we didn't have before. And that was something where we would take our offensive line, usually would finish an inside run period, and then we would have special teams. And most of our offensive line wouldn't be involved in that. So we'd take that group, and they would actually watch the inside run and make adjustments out there on the field and understand some of the things they needed to do in the next time we went to team. And I thought, you know, that was just a great use of technology. They loved it. And, you know, then our kickers would use it in certain parts, our quarterbacks would use it. We'd use it in receiver routes on air, stuff like that. Just has a huge opportunity. And without setting a system up, anybody could take even their iPhone out to practice and be able to show players, you know, what they need to see to make some small corrections that are going to make the difference for them in their performance.
Yeah. And that's one thing I know following you for, you know, a long time on Twitter, you've always just been like, what's the most efficient way? How do we use technology? And I think you do a great job of always showing coaches what, you know, what they can do and how easy they can do it, just even in the micro action of it, not necessarily buying huge, big products to do it all. So thanks for doing that as well.
Oh, well, yeah, I appreciate that, Coach. And I think that's a good point, is there's a lot of these things that are available. You just got to look a little bit. I know I've written plenty of blogs about them that they're available for free or very low cost. So I think I'd encourage every coach to take advantage of those things. Coach, moving things forward, let's think about, you know, the practice. That word grind comes up quite a bit. Obviously, it's a long season. You know, it's football's a sport. You got to wait till Friday night. You wait a full week till you have that. You know, your work rewarded, sometimes not rewarded, but there's the grind of it that comes in. How do you make it fun for the players? How do you make it fun as the season goes on?
You know, Mondays we do what we call like Spartan football. I think a lot of people call it razzle dazzle, or like it's like ultimate frisbee, but with a football. And so instead of conditioning, we have a couple days a week that we end. In our team competitions, they end up playing that game because I think they work a lot harder doing that than they would running sprints and things like that. And then the other thing is every Thursday we have our team competition, and these are something that could be mental feats like taking the NFL Wunderlich test. It could be, you know, chipping closest to the green. It could be a dodgeball contest. It doesn't matter. We develop something different each week for our kids, and so it always ends the grind of the week on a positive note for our kids because they're having fun, and that's what they kind of remember. They don't remember the one-on-one drills. They remember the fun times with their teammates.
Exactly. Coach, let's focus a little bit on the X's and O's. When you get into that area, what would you say is your area of expertise?
You know, I'd say I'm a spread guy, but I'm not, you know, on one end of the spectrum or the other end. I'm not, you know, an air raid guy. I'm just kind of basically a pro style spread guy who wants to really run the ball if I can and have some good pass concepts if I need them.
So for you, Coach, as you take that pro style of spread offense, what would you say are some of the main things you try to hang your hat on?
You know, we're a big zone school. You know, we want to run outside zone, inside zone, like it's going out of style. You know, we've slowly as we've adapted, you know, the guard, H-back, counter slash king play, you know, we added a few gap scheme things to just to help balance us out a little bit in the run game. But most of the time, if you're going to watch us, if we can run inside zone and outside zone, we're probably going to win that football game.
Inside and outside zone are something that, you know, if you listen to Alex Gibbs, a big zone guru, he tells you that that's all you can run, although over time he's changed and he's seen that the gap schemes actually are a great fit if you teach them the right way. How are you able to fit your gap schemes together with your zone schemes?
You know, by having the read type concepts to it where, you know, if you're running, you know, when we run our power, we're running it basically like inside zone, but our guard is pulling, so we're going to read that three tech. So we're basically running a midline scheme that way when we're running that concept. If we're running our king or our counter type guard, H-back type concept, you know, we're going to leave a DN and we're going to read him, so we can kind of keep our rules very similar for our guys, so we're not changing a lot to it. It's more, yeah, you're pulling on this. When you hear that code word, you know what you're doing. And then we're going to, our quarterbacks are the one that we kind of put the pressure on to know who they need to read on each concept.
Coach, talk us through that power concept. You know, that obviously is a little bit of midline. That's a kind of a unique concept. Talk us through that.
You know, we're going to double hard. We're going to try. We don't see as much odd front like we used to. And that's kind of when we started to mess around with this play, is either to read that backer or to read the four eye, depending how teams were doing. But in the over front scheme of things, we're going to read the three tech. So we're always going to check the run away from him. So he's our read, cause it's a lot easier than trying to midline that one tech. But from there, that guard on the three tech side, he's going to pull. We're going to double with our center and our guard to the one tech. We're going to turn out block on both sides with our tackles there. And we're trying to influence that backer on that pull. And usually on the backside, we might have a tagged an RPO on that. But typically when backer sees pull, he's coming over the top. And so if the three tech crashes on the back hard, our quarterback's got a nice big lane that he can pull and run with the ball.
Coach, in the passing game, you know, again, being more of a pro style type of team, what things do you focus on in the passing game?
You know, we always want to have some kind of out to it. You know, I'm grateful when we first started doing this a long time ago, we were pretty much mirrored routes because we were trying to play tempo and keep signals down to a minimum. But being able to tell our guys left and right side what concepts to run, you know, we basically run a ton of three-step type concepts. You know, when we get real fancy, we run shallow concept, and then we have a couple boot schemes that we play off of just to get our H-backs out in the flat and just stress the defense a little bit off of our zone run game and things like that.
Coach, talk to us about how you get away from having, you know, mirrored sides and terminology-wise, how are you able to dictate, you know, what's going on the different sides?
You know, so, you know, a lot of people run the four quadrant picture board. What we started doing is we just have two quadrants on there. We have a one and a two, and there's a big number one on it and a big number two. And one deals with the left side and two deals with the right side. So with whatever concept we're running, and it takes some organization and coaching on that sideline to make sure you're getting the right stuff out there. But we show those big picture boards, and that's how we kind of get away. So if we're running, you know, a 90 hitch concept on the left side and slants on the right side, those pictures are going to tell those individuals what they need to do on that specific play.
What tells your quarterback which side he's going to go to?
He's going to read coverage. You know, we're just debating this on Twitter the other day. I'm more of, it doesn't matter if it's necessarily cover three. Obviously, I'm going to have concepts that I'm running versus man and three and two that are going to win. But the quarterback's going to take the best side. And sometimes it's the field side. Sometimes it's the boundary. Sometimes our formation dictates, are they playing two on three defensively in the boundary? So we know we have maybe a bubble throw there or something like that. So our quarterback's going to look he's going to read, look at the coverage, look at the safeties, see where his gifts are, what are his easy throws, and that's kind of what we want him to take. And as they learn the system, we start, you know, in sixth grade teaching it to them. It's like, we just want the chains to move. We don't necessarily always need touchdown plays. We don't want to, you know, because we talk about how the fade is a low percentage throw and we're only going to take that when we need to. So if we can have a soft coverage to a side on that slant side, he's going to throw it. If they're in cover three and we're running hitch in the boundary and that hitch is really soft, he's going to catch that snap and deliver it right now, and we'll take what we get and continue moving down the field.
Coach, you mentioned your sixth grade program. Let's take a little bit about developing a feeder system. First of all, what's the right pathway, in your opinion, for the player to take? In other words, when should kids start playing flag football? What's the appropriate age? When do they move to tackle? Is it a modified game? Is it 11-man football? You know, what's your opinion on how that develops right now for the player pathway?
Yeah, we start flag football, and I'm not saying I'm right by any means, but here we start grades 3 through 5, play flag football, and it's basically a 7-on-7 type concept. Now, the thing we always argue, too, is what about the big athletes? We don't want to turn them off. So, you know, we're trying to develop and do some skill things with them weekly so those big athletes, they can learn some O-line techniques and things like that. For tackle, we do not start till sixth grade. We know there's programs around us that start in second grade. They start really young, which is crazy to me. And even sixth grade, we think might be a little young, but we know we just do it in-house. So we don't go play anybody else, but we play 11-on-11. We usually have enough for 3 or 4 teams in our sixth grade program. And so when we're playing 22 of our kids, or we're playing all of our kids on a split field all the time. And we think that's a little more valuable than having only 11 kids on the field at a specific time. And then in our seventh grade, that's when they begin to travel and play some of the local schools around us. And that's a lot more live football for them. So we feel we've eliminated a lot of that safety concerns. We don't have a lot of kids breaking bones because we have a lot of control in that sixth grade league. And because it's ran by us, it's kind of worked out good in our favor.
You also maintain control over developing those coaches. How do you develop the coaches at the younger level?
I've been so blessed that I've had the 9 years I've been here, my levels have never changed. I've never lost a coach yet, which that has really helped our development and obviously our understanding of what we do offensively. We're not spending a lot of time trying to teach someone or someone who thinks maybe they have a different philosophy that's better. So when we get into sixth grade, you know, we introduce our no huddle, our basic, our first 6 plays. And when they have mastery of that, then we have a couple other things that we do. But our coaches do a phenomenal job of teaching them the basic fundamentals. And they practice 5 days a week and they play on a Thursday. And that's kind of all they do. And that's awesome for our development of our young kids. So then when we get to seventh grade, we're so much better than we used to be playing.
Systems-wise, how does that incorporate your offense and your defense?
It's all, you know, we're doing the same. You know, we're over front 4-2-5 type team. So we're getting those personnel. You know, in the sixth grade level, I kind of forgot to mention, we let the kids play any position they want. We let them play a lot so they don't play the same position every game. If a kid doesn't want to play quarterback, that's the only one we allow them to opt out of. But if everyone has to learn to play O-line, you know, they can play running back, receiver, all those different things. And because of that, we find our kids maybe respect the O-line a little better because they haven't always just been the running back, and they don't get it that without those guys, nothing works.
Coach, I commend you for doing that. I think that's a great concept. It's a little something we're trying to do, or we are doing with our what we call our rookie tackle or the modified game, where kids have that option, the ability to play multiple positions. And I think it's important because you can't pigeonhole a kid that young. You just don't know where he's going to be. When he hits the high school level, he might, you know, be, for example, a kid who's a late bloomer, and all of a sudden he grows and he's an offensive lineman, where when he was young, you know, maybe he was one of those smaller guys playing receiver out on the edge. You just don't know, and I think it doesn't do a great service to those kids to just slot him in one position early on.
I think so too. I think the development of that, you know, we try to kind of pinpoint who our quarterbacks might be. And we like to carry a lot because obviously in the spread system, kids sometimes get hurt playing quarterback a little more because they run the ball. So, you know, we try to carry like sixth and seventh grade, sixth and eighth grade. And then as we get to ninth grade, we maybe cut it down to three. And then by varsity time, we have two guys because who knows if they're going to quit or, you know, you don't want to be stuck where, like a few years back, we didn't really have a quarterback and that fit our system.
Coach, let's switch gears here and put the focus back on you a little bit and your learning as a coach. Going back to the beginning, what's a mistake you made as a young coach and what did you learn from it?
You know, I used to have a really bad temper. You know, I used to just chew kids out all the time and it kind of, they weren't trying to make a mistake to make me mad, but I just didn't handle it very well. And when you watch yourself and you go, geez, this is how I'm treating kids, or, you know, when you do your year-end review back then, it was like, you know, I think you yell a little too much and you're like, oh, you know, you kind of start to self-reflect a little bit of how you do it. And what I've seen now is that usually when kids make mistakes, it's because they're trying maybe even too hard. That's what happens. And so, you know, I'm a lot more, my demeanor for that stuff is a lot calmer now. And just wish I never went through that process, but I'm glad that I learned it very quickly how to coach a little more proactively.
What's the best coaching advice you've received in your career?
You know, to be yourself. Don't try to be someone you're not and build the program that's your own. Don't try and copy another program because, you know, they've had a lot of success. They have success because of the traditions that they've built, and you need to kind of develop and build your own traditions. And I think that was really good advice to learn at a young age.
Coach, what advice do you have to that young coach stepping onto the field as a coach for the first time? You know, that guy who wants to make it in his career long term. What advice do you have for him?
You know, treat coaches well, work hard, you know, do your job well. I think there's a lot of people trying to make shortcuts that are trying to climb the ladder very quickly, that all they're going to do is what's self-serving to them. And I really think loyalty is kind of a thing of the past in the in some aspects of the coaching profession. You know, I'm very grateful none of my guys really want to move on or be a head coach, so we don't have any of that. But some of those young guys, they want to be a head coach really, really fast, and I think it really takes time and learn, and the more patient you can be, I think it'll help your career in the long run.
Coach, what's a book you've learned from that you would recommend to our listeners?
You know, there's a couple, you know, Quiet Strength is a really, really good one by Tony Dungy that I thought was a very good read just for that personal self-reflecting, how to coach. And then it's kind of passed me by the Bill Belichick's dad book about scouting. That was a huge eye-opener for me probably like four or five years ago when I got my hands on a copy of it, just how much detail the Belichicks had when it came down to breaking down games. And that's really helped me to look at specific things because it's not really necessarily about scheme. It's more about looking at what is their personnel and how can you attack that personnel. And that's really helped me see the game kind of in a different light.
Coach, how do you create balance in this profession? You know, balance between what can really become a grind because we're so passionate about it and the other things that have to be a priority, like your family, your health, et cetera.
You know, for me, the big thing, my wife's obviously been with me since the beginning, which has been great. So she understands it, but we kind of came to an understanding a long time ago that I was going to get up really, really early on Saturdays and Sundays. And I was going to get work done and I was going to get, you know, 2-3 hours of work done. And then once everybody was up, it was time to put away the laptop and then not get back to it till later in the evening, till everyone went to bed. And I think that's given me a lot of, it's made me more efficient because I know I only have so much time. Obviously, sometimes when you're losing, it's not, that's not always the best method. You feel like you want to bury yourself in there, but I think your kids give you perspective. My oldest daughter now is kind of a part of our program. She's kind of our water girl. And helps us out on Friday nights. So seeing her and doing that stuff has been really, really, really helped me.
Coach, let's
develop that balance in my family, sir.
Coach, let's pick up the pace here and jump into our two-minute drill. So just some quick question and answers. Let's start with defense. Schematically, what's the toughest defense to face?
You know, I think some kind of odd front team, you have to be really precise in what you want to do and attack it. I think you got to game plan it much differently than you would with an over front team.
What's your favorite goal line play?
Favorite goal line play? Quarterback sneak if I can get it. You know, it's probably the only time I ever go under center, but my kids seem to like it, so we'll run that one if we can.
Turf or grass?
Oh, I wish I had turf just for practice purposes. Really, <it'd, laughs> to save on the field. Grass is great, but turf would be the way to go.
What's your favorite backfield set?
Just quarterback, running back, offset, near far there is the best way that we like to do things.
Day game or night game?
Night game. Friday night. Got to be Friday night.
If you had to run your offense from one formation, what would it be?
3-by-1 with a tight end on 11 personnel, tight end away from the trips. I think that's just a nasty formation for the defense to adjust to.
Should the kickoff be eliminated?
No. I think it's a great part of the game. It gives a different skill set type of kid an opportunity to be on the field.
If you could learn from one coach from the past, who would it be?
Oh, Vince Lombardi, I think for sure. He'd be amazing just to sit in and see how he developed the game back then.
How about one from the present?
Bill Belichick or Nick Saban. It would be a split between those two. I just think they get it and they understand what's going on. They might not necessarily treat people always the best way, but I think they understand how to coach football.
Coach, good job on the two-minute drill. Here's the final question. What's the one thing you would point to as giving your team the winning edge?
You know, I want to say it's number of snaps. I honestly believe that offensively, if we hit anywhere in that 75 to 80 range of snaps, we're going to win the football game. Just flat out, it's not really yardage or anything. I just think us being on the field, we don't really have a time of possession. But I think the more snaps, the more plays that we can run, the better our program will be.
Coach, how can our listeners connect with you?
Coach Mike Rowe at Coach Mike Rowe on Twitter, or recorifootball@gmail.com are two easy ways to get a hold of me. And I always love talking to coaches, and my phone line's always available to those who reach out to me.
Coach, I really appreciate you taking the time to be with us here on the Coaching Coordinator Podcast, and good luck to you in this coming season.
Yeah, thanks, Keith, so much. It was a lot of fun. Appreciate what you do for the game of football and everything. You do a lot of great things, and I think a lot of coaches are very lucky to be able to follow you in this day and age of social media and websites and technology, and it's just great what you do, so thank you.
Thanks, Coach. I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.